and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5. Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
Well, I've got some water in front of me. I'm talking to you. Life is good.
It's a good day. Well, I got to tell you, I want to start out this episode. We've been hearing from listeners who have been emailing in. By the way, if you have a question or an idea for a show topic, just shoot me an email, jstayton, S-T-A-Y-T-O-N, at KUT.org. We'll talk about it in a future episode, possibly.
You have a very complicated name for a radio person that wants to get email.
Do you know why I didn't change my name? Because I knew I would forget. If I had ever changed my name to have a different name for radio, I would.
See, I think it should be Jennifer Stay.
Well, it's a little late now.
S-T-A-Y. I know, your career is way too big.
A little late now. But, so I want to bring to your attention, we got an email from Trixie. She's a listener, and she had a couple of questions. Not necessarily specifically about an episode, but I want to get these in there so that she and everybody else can hear your answers.
We need to respond to Trixie.
We do.
She's one of our loyal listeners.
Yes. Okay, so first of all, she wants to know,
please,
what is your favorite thing to eat?
I see. Well, that's like saying what's your favorite movie. You know, it just depends on what you're in the mood for. My favorite thing to eat.
Yes.
Let's see.
The people want to know.
I would say, let me tell you about the volume.
Okay.
My favorite volume is large.
Okay.
So I like eating a lot.
Uh-huh.
Which is a problem, by the way, that I have. I like eating... I like eating, you know, I'm in Texas, so I like barbecue.
Uh-huh.
is great. I love desserts.
Yeah.
And I try to avoid them, so I do not eat desserts because I'm not a big carb guy.
Yeah.
But I love chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate is an amazing substance.
Maybe we should do an episode sometime about food that helps you think.
Oh, that would be interesting. I wonder... Oh, you know, and I'll tell you, there's some healthful foods I like. I should mention some healthful foods. By the way, beets. Beets, they're interesting. In fact, now I can do a whole thing on beets, but I won't. I hate beets. But about 10 years ago, I read how really good they are for you, for all sorts of different organs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I forced myself to start eating beets. They're disgusting. They're roots. They're in the ground. They're dirty. And you know what? It's amazing. And maybe this is a metaphor for education.
Yeah.
That I for 10 or 15 years now, I've been eating beets, and now I love them.
They're
I cannot
good.
Get enough beets. And so maybe that's also something to be said for different ideas, that as long as you kind of warm up to them, then maybe you begin to at least appreciate them. But now I eat beets. So beets is something I enjoy, and I can give you a bunch of other helpful food later.
Well, there you go, Trixie. You have an answer.
Blueberries, by the way, are excellent.
Yes, beets and blueberries.
You can freeze blueberries. Here's a little tip. So you can actually, if you buy blueberries during blueberry season... when they're an excellent antioxidant, you can put them in the freezer and they will freeze like little pellets, and you can either thaw them out under hot water or, as I do, eat them frozen as an alternative to ice cream and sorbet, and they are delicious.
There now, Trixie has another question. Her second question, did you have any inspiration that made you the awesome man you are today?
Can we go back to the food question?
this is her second question.
Well, Trixie, that's very nice of you. Thank you. I don't know what has made me. I guess all of our life experiences end up making us who we are today. And that's why I'm so passionate about education, which is that that experience, if it's truly a life-changing experience that offers the practices and habits of thinking, of creating, connecting, and being a lifelong learner, then it will really shape who you are today. So I'm definitely who I am today because of the educational experience I had and all the mentors and teachers, not just the faculty, staff, and then students, and then friends and family, and just, you know, leaders that you see that you want to admire. You also learn a lot about, you evolve into who you are today by looking at people that you don't want to emulate, and you say, I want to make sure I don't do that. And so everyone can really be a teacher, and I think that helps shape us. And to not acknowledge that our education, formal or informal, shapes who we are is to not acknowledge the true power and potential of education.
Did you ever have doubt along the way about...
That's all I have.
my whole life, goodness.
My whole life.
Have I struck a nerve? Oh,
no,
my goodness.
No. I liked it. I think doubt is good.
You think doubt is good?
Absolutely.
How is doubt good?
Well, I would argue that maybe the fact that we don't perceive doubt as a strength, I think, has played into where we see ourselves today on all sorts of issues, whether they be political, social, world. The fact that we are not open to the idea that maybe our minds can be changed, or maybe our perspective is not exactly aligned with what we truly believe and is our values, or maybe our values should be challenged and maybe we could change. The fact that we become greater and more polarized, I think, is evidence that we doubt less and less. And I would argue that doubt is actually a very important element in practices of being a lifelong learner. You should always doubt.
Walk me through an example of doubt, of somebody opening themselves up to some doubt and some wondering, and then how that can play out positively.
Well, I'm not suggesting that you and I have a debate about a particular issue, whatever the issue may be, and I have one view and you have an opposing view, and that after the debate, because of my doubt, I just change my mind overnight. But what I'm suggesting is that we at least create space in our lives and in our thoughts for doubt. So, for example, suppose we debate an issue. It could be a really charged one or one that's
or
less
like
important.
Cats or dogs.
Correct, which is a very charged one. But we go back and forth. Now, maybe I come to it and I acknowledge my doubt going in. So I am a fan of this particular, I'm not even going to say one because I don't want to annoy our audience, but I'm a fan of one of these, I'm on this side of this, 95%. I'm 95% on this side. So it's not 100%, but it's 95%.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back and forth. And then after you debate, when we're done, I still might be pro this side, but maybe I'll say, well, now I'm pro this side 82%. So I still believe this, but I've opened myself up to take in the intellectual stimulation that you've offered me. And to me, that doesn't happen. When we watch political pundits on these TV programs where two of them are going at it, they just yell over each other. I look at it as kind of pseudo-intellectual wrestling. It's just the drama of watching people fight. And I think that in today's culture, because of reality TV and social media, we like people fighting. We like watching that live, real fighting. But that's not an intellectual discourse. If you want to have intellectual discourse, there has to be back and forth. When have you seen one of those programs on any of these shows, far right, far left, anywhere in between, where two political pundits are going after each other, and then at one point, one says to the other, okay, now wait a minute, Jennifer, that's a good point.
I'm gonna have to
stop and think about that. I'm going to come back next week, and that never happens. They just talk over each other. And therefore, that is what we model through the media. And so therefore, if you want to be a good citizen, then you have to be entrenched in your ways. And zero doubt is the right way to live your life. And I'd argue that it's not a thoughtful, reflective way to live your life.
Do you think that there's any kind of relationship between showing, I'm going to say, sort of intellectual flexibility, which I think is the same thing as doubt. I mean, mm-hmm. showing that you've got some room to maneuver here. Do you think people are afraid if they show that they'll be perceived as not smart or able to be manipulated or not, or maybe a little weak? Obviously some...
We have names for it. Flip-flop,
yeah,
flip-floppers,
exactly.
Wishy-washy. These are all negative things. I wonder if maybe someone who's a flip-flopper or considered wishy-washy, whatever these expressions are, maybe those should be positive things in the sense that, wow, here's a person that is able to change his or her own mind. I mean, we are growing, living beings. Change is everything. If we're not changing, then we're dying. And so the idea of being able to change your mind is maybe a great gift. Now, how do you change your mind? Are you doing it with intentionality? Are you doing it thoughtfully? Is it solely an emotional response to some stimulation? Maybe some issues, an emotional response, like, you know, am I in love with this or that? Well, that might be totally an emotional thing, and maybe it shouldn't be a kind of a logical, thoughtful thing. Maybe another issue, I shouldn't be applying emotions. I should be applying different forms of reasoned thought. But at the end of the day, we need to be open. And if we're open-minded, then I think that there's hope that we can grow. And if we're going to be closed-minded, then there's no way to even begin the conversation. And I find that very problematic.
So I have tried to stay open-minded and flexible about the puzzler. You introduced one last week that seemed on its surface pretty straightforward, but there's got to be a lot going on underneath that. So I'm very curious.
I will remind our listeners as to that challenge that I threw out there last episode. I called it the Georgetown downpour. So this past spring, we had tons of rain at Southwestern University, which made our campus even more green and beautiful than usual. Now, on one particular soggy spring day, it began thundering and lightning and raining cats and dogs at the stroke of midnight. Given the storm weather patterns of that spring, is it possible that 72 hours after this particular storm began, the weather on campus was sunny?
No.
Ah, now, last episode, you said yes.
I think I got it.
So you figured something out.
No, I think I got it.
Look at you. Oh, look at it. It's a little pic. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a beautiful diagram that is drawn, and I don't even, there's no labeling, but I will tell you right now that diagram is the answer. Very good. So tell us your answer and tell us how you got it.
So the key is, I guess I could say in one sentence, it is never sunny at midnight.
It is never sunny at midnight.
So 72 hours past a midnight is another midnight. And you may have clear skies, but at least in Georgetown, Texas, the sun is not out.
Brilliant. And share for our listening audience the little diagram that you created, because I want them to see how you thought about it very visually.
So first I wrote down the word green. I think that turned out to be a red herring with the color
theme. A green herring.
So
our campus, though, was so spectacularly beautiful, I had to plug it.
So I wrote down midnight, and then I wrote an arrow. I wrote three sets of arrows, because I was doing a set of 24 hours, which is 3 days, that gets you to 72. So I realized 24, 48, 72 hours. 72 hours later, and you're back at another midnight.
You're still midnight. So, brilliant. Brilliant, you see? And the knee-jerk reaction you had that was of course it could be anything.
Yes.
It could be sunny.
Right.
Could be anything. And so, then further thought. So there, you should always have doubt. And you did. You said, I'm thinking, but you were doubtful. And then you've come. So look, you've changed.
I was doubtful, and I think the interesting thing is, what was I doubtful about? I was not doubtful about my ability to figure this out or puzzle through it, or that I had the wherewithal to figure it out. I just doubted if maybe what I had landed on the first time was really true. And I think there's a difference between sort of what you're doubting. I'm not doubting me or my ability to do it, and I wouldn't want anybody who. You know, if we're talking about doubt, we're not talking about doubting your own abilities. We're talking about doubt, I think, in its greatest, broadest sense, which is questioning, wondering,
exactly.
Kind of pondering.
Well, and being open.
And being open.
Now I have to ask you a question.
Yes.
Because you brought this up earlier. I'm not going to let this episode close.
Okay.
Until you tell us.
What?
Cats or dogs?
Oh, cats.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. I think you've actually confessed that on a previous episode last season.
Now, I will hastily add.
Mm-hmm. See, now you're going to try to backpedal. Well, wait. First of all, give your answer. Cats with what percentage? You can't be 100%.
So.
Come on.
Well, this is interesting because I have never had a dog. I grew
but
up with
you've
cats.
Experienced dogs.
I've certainly experienced dogs, and I've had wonderful dog experiences. I don't know what it's like to have and care for a dog.
So do the best you can.
So my
imperfect information.
I'm gonna go like 87%.
Look
cat.
At you now. That to me is an excellent. You're an excellent role model for being open minded because 87% cats. That's like a B+ in the grade scheme.
Yeah.
So that's good. Okay, now tell us why you like cats so much.
Well,
and all of our dog listeners have now just turned off.
So I think I love cats. I think cats are wonderful companions. I think because they respond to humans kind of where we are. You know, if I'm having a bad day, I think they pick up on that and they
notice. You
don't
think dogs?
See, I don't know. That's where the 87, because see, I'm not saying dogs don't do that. I just don't have that experience. But I think cats also have that sort of, I'm sorry, I don't have time for this right
exactly.
now. I've got to go catch that. You know, bug over there. So I just love that. I think cats are their own. I was about to say cats are their own
people. Right?
Cats are their own cats.
They are. And I think that's why a lot of dog lovers are, you know, kind of pick dogs over cats.
Yeah.
Because cats are so independent and so smart, because they know no matter what I do to my owner, I'm going to be fed there'll be some victuals waiting right. for me. Whereas a dog feels like, well, I better be really nice uh-huh. because this yeah. might be it for me.
But the dogs I have met, I'm particularly partial to Newfoundlands. Yeah. They're great. They're great. Okay. So I'm going to stick with about the 87%.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Means you're open.
And I'm open to, if we ever had a dog in our house, I bet that number would shift a little more. It might shift one way or another because I don't know what that experience would be, but I am open to it. And Ed, thank you for always being open for great conversations and helping us keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. You can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org, and you can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.